Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
This is Radio Boston. I'm Evan Horowitz. A little later in today's program, we'll air our conversation with Marty Meehan, president of the University of Massachusetts System. But first, our regular Common Health segment with WBUR's Common Health editor, Carrie Goldberg. Carrie, how you doing?
I'm good, Evan. How are you?
So you brought us goodies, some surprising findings from a study about genes and mental illness.
That is right. So it's about genes that raise the risk of mental illness and a huge new paper on that topic that's out in the journal Science. And when I say huge, I mean it encompasses data on the DNA of more than a million people, a couple of 100,000 patients, and the rest of them were controls used for comparison. So it looks at how many of the genetic variants, you know, those are the little genetic spelling changes that raise the risk of brain disorders, are shared across the disorders. And it finds some pretty surprising genetic overlaps.
All right, just so I'm understanding.
Yeah.
You're saying there are some mental health issues that don't really seem connected, but they're influenced by the same genes?
Exactly right.
Like
right.
What?
So, well, here's one of the study's leaders, Ben Neal, from the Stanley Center at the Broad Institute in Cambridge.
We see a pattern of genetic correlation across OCD and anorexia nervosa, and we see a pattern of genetic correlation between OCD and Tourette's. But we don't see any evidence of real overlap between Tourette's and anorexia.
So that's OCD, obsessive compulsive disorder, and Tourette's syndrome, that disorder that often involves all, you know, these involuntary verbal tics. So they seem to have some shared genetic roots.
Look like different phenomena, shared genetic roots. Right? Do we know why, how they're connected? What's the mystery?
So let's let Ben Neal explain.
Part of the genetic risk that may overlap between OCD and anorexia might be tapping into some more of the obsessionality considerations, whereas some of the overlap between OCD and Tourette's might be tapping into certain circuit dysfunctions.
So you hear a lot of might be. It's very early days for this research. But one thing is clear that, you know, these are three diagnoses that are completely distinct in the big Bible of psychiatric diagnoses, the DSM. But it's looking like some of their genetics and so some of the underlying brain biology could be shared.
Early days. Everybody says early days, but yeah. we want to know, like, what's the goal here? To get a better understanding of how to connect genes to biology and then disease?
Exactly. So psychiatric diagnoses are based overwhelmingly on symptoms, but the goal is to be able to base psychiatric diagnoses and treatments much more on biology, on what's actually going awry in the brain. Now, there have been previous suggestions from twin studies and the like that some of the genetic underpinnings of mental illness do overlap across diagnoses. Here's Dr. Jordan Smoller. He's the director of the Psychiatric and Neurodevelopmental Genetics Unit at Mass General Hospital and an author on this paper.
What's interesting here is the degree of overlap across many disorders. And some of this is not so surprising because many of these disorders have overlap in their symptoms. But some of it really does challenge our basic classification of psychiatric disorders.
So, Evan, for example, schizophrenia and bipolar disorder, very different things, right?
They're considered to be mutually exclusive at a clinical level. You can't diagnose both of them in an individual. And yet at a genetic level, they overlap to a remarkable degree. The correlation of genetic factors is about 0.7, which is very high. So that challenges a little bit of our understanding of how distinct those disorders might be.
And again, it's very early days, but what's intriguing here is that you can start to imagine a whole different way of classifying mental illnesses that would be bottom up rather than top down. So starting with biology rather than with a checklist of symptoms. Although Dr. Smoller also notes that at this point, all we're talking about is genetic risk factors, the same way that like smoking is a risk factor for both lung disease and heart disease, but those are obviously very different diseases.
Right. Like the word we're trying to avoid here is causes.
Yeah,
right?
No
causes,
right?
Genes aren't causing these mental illnesses. We're just getting genetic clues to what might be going on.
Exactly. Here's Dr. Smoller again.
I think what it does say is that, you know, the clinical conventions that we have are not, as we say, carving nature at its joints. It's not representing the underlying biology in some highly sophisticated way.
And I always love that expression, carving nature at the joints, because one of the hellish things about the brain is that it just doesn't have joints, right? It's all a bunch of jello, at least not easily visible parts like the rest of our organs. So basically, this is another step, another effort toward trying to tease out exactly what goes wrong in the brain.
Okay. How far can we push this? Like, is it fair to say that depending on your genes, some people might have a predisposition to all kinds of mental illnesses, just like a vulnerable brain?
Right. Like, is there an overarchingly vulnerable brain? And the basic answer is, we don't know. Here's Dr. Smoller.
All of these conditions are a combination of genetics and environment or experience. And it may be that there are some very broad risk factors, genes and pathways that affect, for example, brain development in some fundamental ways that give a general predisposition to a number of disorders.
So he's saying maybe, right? So if you think of your brain getting wired up as you go through life, there could be these features that confer broad risk, and then experiences or something in your environment or other genes that come on later in life could kind of channel all of this into what we now recognize as a mental illness.
All right. So what do we do with this knowledge? Right? Yeah. Can I go and get a genetic test and find out if I'm uniquely vulnerable to mental illness?
No, not in like a 23andMe kind of consumer genetics way. Dr. Smoller is very clear that psychiatric genetics is not at the point where it's actually clinically useful at this point. But the hope is that it will be. And he says the goal is to develop new treatments based on biological factors that cause or contribute to mental illness.
And also to predict response to treatment and to stratify or match individuals to the treatments that are going to be the most helpful for them so that we don't have to go through this kind of one-size-fits-all trial and error approach that we have typically taken.
So, you know, the trial and error is the psychiatrist tells you, I think you might do well on this particular med, but without really having any hardcore medical markers that would suggest that you'll do better on this med rather than a different one. So it would be just really great if genes or brain imaging or something more biological could help determine who should take which psych med or maybe no med at all.
That makes sense. I wonder if I'm getting it wrong, but it seems like it could go the other way, too, where it turns out we're categorizing things wrong, and what we really need is a whole different way of thinking about connections between mental illnesses that match the underlying biology.
Right. And that's part of what really captured my imagination with the study, is that it also raises the prospect that we could eventually be diagnosed using more of the underlying categories that these genetic studies are turning up, like high levels of executive function problems or obsessionality or neuroticism. So they cut across our current diagnoses, and maybe they'll become more prominent in what we focus on in mental disorders. And one last point, Evan, research like this can also be seen as underscoring the idea that there aren't really sharp lines between what we consider normal and disordered mental function.
Yeah, often mental illness is a question of degree, including apparently the degree to which we have some of these genetic traits you're talking about.
Right. Here is Dr. Smoller.
When some of these more quantitative or dimensional traits move toward the extreme, we recognize them as clinical disorders. But I think I and many other people increasingly think that there isn't really a yes, no, or sharp line between disorder and, quote, normal.
Which I certainly find comforting. I'm not sure if I'm, quote, normal, and maybe you do too.
I don't know. I feel like I have to consult my genes first. But either way,
take a look.
Thanks, Carrie, for keeping us apprised on the science that may someday change our lives.
Welcome.
Carrie Goldberg is editor of WBUR's Common Health blog. You can find a link to the paper in the journal Science we were discussing on our website, radioboston.org. Thanks, Carrie. Stay with us. There's more ahead. I'm Evan Horowitz, and this is Radio Boston.